Hi, I'm Andrew.
And I'm Tim, and this is Get On Board, a podcast about games worth playing. So, this episode is about how bits of cardboard and plastic on your table can create amazing experiences with you and your friends. We're going to be talking about some of the experiences we've had over games, some different kinds of experiences that we've had with games. But it is truly amazing how this board game, this object on your table, in some cases can transcend sort of just being an object and just become the centerpiece or the almost coordinator of this incredible experience with you and people you care about.
Yeah, exactly. I like to say that board games are a framework for social interaction. And I think what that really means at the end of the day is that I care about stories. I care about specific games that I play with specific people. And I remember those. That will always be more special to me than, you know, a game with great mechanics that I can admire from afar as a museum piece.
All right, so let's get to it. Let's begin. We're going to kind of take several categories of ways that games have created experiences for us. So let's begin with the first one. Games that are so powerful that you remember specific plays of it. So Andrew, why don't you take it?
Okay, so I've got one that immediately jumps to mind. Sheriff of Nottingham is one of my favorite games. I rated a 10, and I remember, like it was yesterday, one specific play of it. I was playing with some family friends. They really helped me out during college, and we're playing with you know, a guy that I look up to as almost like a mentor figure. And we start playing Sheriff of Nottingham, and he turns into the smarmiest piece of slime I've ever seen. And you know, he's hamming it up when his bag is being inspected. He goes, "Well, Your Grace, I would never defraud you with illegal goods," and he just got so annoying. And more than that, he smuggled through just enough contraband and knew exactly when to stop so that we all just hated his guts and started opening his bags only to find out that he was actually innocent for the rest of the game. He carried it away with a landslide, and it just totally solidified my love for this game, because I'll always remember that, where my opinion of this one guy just totally changed because of this game.
I remember the first game in my group where we started getting, because we didn't like it at first. It wasn't like a total hit for us at first until we started giving ourselves permission to do those smarmy, stinky things like, okay, I'll tell you what, you let my hand go completely because it's all contraband and I'm going to let yours go on the next time. I mean, it's when you really kind of push the boundaries on that game of the bribery negotiation, that's when it really comes alive.
Right.
So yeah, I hear you on that one. What else do you have on your list? Take another one.
Well, another one I've got. Okay, so this one just lends itself to remembering specific stories. But Shadows over Camelot, one of my favorite cooperative games. I remember I was playing this at a bachelor party for a friend, and the groom's best man was actually the traitor. And we had been dealt a really bad hand, and we were just totally struggling to even get any white swords on the table. And we come up with this plan. There were seven of us playing, so we were sure that there was a traitor, but we weren't willing to accuse anyone because we were worried about flipping that sword over to black. And we're trying and trying and trying. We're barely getting out of it. We think we're going to win. And then this best man looks at Mason, and he accuses him, which up until that point in the game, no one else had done. He flipped a white sword over to the sixth black sword. We lost the game, and then he flipped Mason the double bird. And it was so incredibly memorable because here's this nice guy and just totally played the traitor perfectly. And we all remembered it. And half of us had never met each other before. And yet we played this game, and at the wedding the next day, you know, we're all trash talking each other at the wedding because that's how memorable the game was for us the night before.
So I had a group of young adults, students, because I was an English teacher overseas for many years, that we played this game together. And it became I have so many stories. I could do an episode entirely on Shadows over Camelot stories. But I remember great ones where, you know, we were fishing for the traitor and trying to really understand who it was around the table, read each other. And then we reach the conclusion at the end, you know, the only way we can win this is if we accuse the traitor once and get it right. But we think that that one out of, in this case, one out of seven chance mm-hmm. may have triggered where the traitor card is in the box. And just going with that trust to the very end and flipping over all of our cards and realizing everybody was loyal. We've also done the other where it was in the box and we accused each other and ended up losing the game completely, which was a another story to talk about. When I left, I didn't have enough room to take all my games back with me, and I decided to rebuy some of them in the States. We actually had a knighting ceremony where I gave the game to the group and we knighted each other with the board game. That was the cheesiest, craziest thing. But that old beat up game, it was just an object of affection in our group mm-hmm. and the center of stories. It was mm-hmm. amazing.
So what's another one off your list?
Well, one off of my list, Sentinels of the Multiverse. Now, I will admit that this one is primarily with one person, my son, who when we were living overseas, he and I played this game a lot. And you can see my review on Board Game Geek about Sentinels. I know that for some people it's really mathy, it's really crunchy, and it is those things. But it also puts me into the character more than any game I have ever played. And boy, I mean, I remember a specific incident where we were up against Grand Warlord Voss. All of our heroes are just about completely exhausted, and we only had one more round to go. He had so many supporting minions and cards out there. There just seemed like there was no way we were going to make it. And Legacy drew his card that said, Legacy was able to play his card that says, hey, I'll suffer damage so that nobody takes damage for one round. And we got 30 damage off on Grand Warlord Voss, and we just turned that thing around. And boy, my son and I just walked away from that just so, feeling so heroic. I mean, and I still remember that. That was like, what, 3 years ago. And I remember that story. My son does through today.
You make me want to play the game. I've never played it. Well, there's a lot of math, though. That's not my thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Lancaster is another one. Lancaster. Yeah, I know you're a fan of this one,
too. I'm a big fan.
Although you and I have not played this one together as much as we've played it with other people, I think.
It's true. Although we both have the same person in mind.
When
we call this game, you know, a story experience.
Okay, well, one of the interesting things about Lancaster is that we introduced a friend who we were really introducing him, I think, to the hobby pretty mm-hmm. much through this game. And I would not have thought that this was the best game to do that with. I usually try lighter fare, but he really took to this game. And it has this really, the meat of it, the stories of it are these. Well, I guess they happen in two places in the game. That first phase where your knights are knocking out the knights from the other from their spots. Yep. I mean, Lancaster is a very unusual worker placement game in that you place your workers and you don't get the benefit until immediately. You get it at the end of the round if your workers are still there.
Right.
And the other player can add stronger knights or these little squires that buff up the knights to knock you off. And so there is a lot of back and forth backstabbing that goes on there. And then when you go to pass the laws, well, then it becomes this huge negotiation between who we think is ahead, who we think is going to win the game, you know, what law should pass that benefit who. And I had a specific game of this not long ago with this friend where I just sort of whined and complained and used the hey, I'm the underdog here sort of approach to back and forth get both other players, because it was a three-player game, to side with me in different ways. And in the end, I won the game through that smarminess.
That's great.
But yeah. Yeah. What else do you have on your list?
The last one I've got on my list is Glory to Rome. This is my number one game of all time. I absolutely love this game. And what I remember about it is just at our Saturday game night, this one has really developed its own personal metagame behind it. And I can still remember as players introduced elements that were new to us. So maybe one player totally rushed the catacomb card, you know, one game, and we all thought, wow, that was really annoying that she beat us so thoroughly. And so the next game, we were all on the lookout for that. And then someone won with the forum. And so we were all on the lookout for that. And just, it's such a rich, deep game with so many different ways to win that I've really enjoyed just unlocking the metagame with maybe, it's probably 6 or 7 people in my game group who actually love it. And we've just played it and really just enjoyed that depth together. It's such a good game for that.
You know, this is a little bit of an aside, but I'm going to say it. We will, on Get On Board, talk about games that are out of print. And we will especially do it when we want to create buzz
yes.
that we hope will eventually bring the game back into print. I don't think it's an accident that Pillars of the Earth is coming online again after several years off and after, I believe, if I recall, a statement that it was never going to be released again as a board game because of the buzz that reviewers gave it. Glory to Rome has got to come back.
We'd take it.
Oh, my goodness.
Ed Carter, if you're listening. We'd also take the original Dune if Frank Herbert's estate is listening.
Yeah. That might be a little much to ask. No. Let's ask for it.
But we'll ask for it.
Yeah.
Christmas
no,
present.
Glory to Rome is, if you can get your hands on that copy, there's a reason, or copy of that, there's a reason why that's such a grail game.
Absolutely.
Well, on my list, I have another one, Zaya Legends of Adrift System.
Ooh.
You know, I know that Zaya gets a little bit of criticism and critique for some of its, for a little bit of its unpolished nature. Some criticize it as having a bit of a roll and move element. I'm telling you, that's one of those games where if you can just let go of some of that, you'll discover an epic gaming experience.
Absolutely.
I have had so many incredible games of that, but the specific memory that I'm thinking of is one where I had just built up this trade route, and I was just rocking that trade route, just scoring credits like crazy, and I was going to be the clear winner unless somebody did something. And so there was this incredible moment where, I forget whether it was you or Evan.
It was me. I rammed you because you were so wealthy. You had the best weapon systems. You had the best propulsion systems. You had the best shields. And you're just carrying this cargo, getting richer and richer and richer. And I looked at Evan across the table and I said, we've got to do something. So I think Evan strafed you with some guns. And then I just went right in and I rammed you just enough to kill you.
Yeah.
And throw off your stride. You had to regenerate the next turn. And it was just barely enough. I mean, we scraped by.
I mean, Zaya isn't player elimination. Dying, I mean, you can sort of recover, respawn, right. But still, it really throws it off. And so, yeah, that was really an epic moment.
I don't know of a game other than Zaya that I can lose myself in and 3 hours go by in the blink of an eye. I don't know of another game that does that so effectively.
Well, there's another category of games where it's not like the game is so powerful that we remember specific plays of it, but where sort of the accumulated depth of all the great experiences that we've had with this game mm-hmm. makes it a favorite.
Right.
So, Andrew, why don't you take the first one? I think that will be a good example to explain this.
Okay. So I've got too many to list here. So I'll throw out a couple games, and then I want to zero in on one of them because, for me, this one game just kind of exemplifies this idea for me. So I've got plenty of games where I just remember a generally favorable time after playing it, you know, 30 or 40 times. Dixit, A Fake Artist Goes to New York, Mafia de Cuba, the Abstract Twixt, which I play with two other guys, and it's just our special game. But the game that most exemplifies this for me is Codenames Duet. Now, I'm not as big of a Codenames fan as most people. I actually don't really enjoy the large group version. I do like the two-player version. I like the cooperative aspect. My wife absolutely loves it. It's probably her favorite game. And that's what's interesting about it to me, is when I think about Codenames Duet, I don't think about genius mechanics or a game that's a personal 10 for me and it's my absolute favorite game. But what I think about instead is, you know, going to Winstead's and eating hamburgers and french fries with my wife and playing this game afterwards. We've played this game in Starbucks. We've played this game at parks. We've played this game on road trips. So when I think about it, I think about all of that time spent with my wife, and that makes it a really special game for me, even though I like it, but it's not, you know, knocking my socks off in a mechanics way or anything. It's that experience, the accumulated depth of just a lot of quality time with my wife. That's what I think of when I think of Codenames Duet.
So for me, it's kind of a bit of a different list, but there is one of these sort of party games on here, mm-hmm. and I'll call it Pirate Dice, even though it's called Liar's Dice by most. But the reason why I call it Pirate Dice is I have the Disney version of it with the pirate cups, like in the Pirates movie itself. And the one on the dice rather than just being straight up one is a skull and crossbones. And the way you call the bluff is you say, never trust a pirate. And I know that little extra theming on it just adds something to it. And okay. Every time we go over to a friend's house, my son Evan will say, hey, let's take pirate dice. And I will think, well, okay, we'll take it, but we'll probably end up playing something else. And it inevitably becomes the star of the evening. It's just, I can't tell you specific plays of it or specific things that happen. It's just so smarmy and so backstabby that it creates these really cool experiences. Another one for me is Smash Up. I absolutely love Smash Up.
Excellent.
And when played with people that know the game, it's fun how the game begins. The metagame begins not when you're playing the game, not even when you're drafting your factions. It begins when you invite them over that evening and you say, hey, you know, maybe I'll play dragons tonight, when you're intending to play something else. I mean, it's that draft at the beginning for the factions you're going to play. And then just the nature of this game, kind of the wild combos you get, the way you can make something work that you've never seen work together before. And if you have enough factions of it, that's the key. Mm. You've got to have like a lot of factions, in my view, to pull that off. But that's another one that just my game groups have had a lot of fun with. Some other honorable mentions in this category, a family game called Castle Panic that our family has a lot of real fun memories with. Android Netrunner, again, with the right group, can become this really heady and fun meta game experience. And Eclipse, you know, that's another game that I played with a specific group over and over. And it's probably just my memory on this one, because I'm sure there are many of those games I remember bits and pieces of, but we loved getting together and playing that, and that was just part of our group's story, was these epic battles, pumping up your ships with all these crazy weapons, and yet still, you know, the other guy manages to outroll and squeak by, and it's sort of it just has a lot of that epic feel to it, and it just created good stories for our group.
I really need to try that one. I have actually not played it yet, which is inexcusable. I really need to try it.
Well, it's only inexcusable to some of us who don't mind a few Euro elements in our 4X games. There are those who are very opposed to it. But yeah, I'd be curious to see how you feel about that game once you try it.
Okay. Well, here's a much harder question to wrap it up. A game that you hated, or just objectively a terrible game, but you still managed to have a great experience with it. Do you have any?
Yeah. I mean, of course, my opinion of what's objectively bad is very subjective.
Sure.
But, you know, I guess the first thing that comes to mind is playing games with my children, right? I mean, sometimes you get dragged into games when you're, you know, when your kid is little, of Hi-Ho Chariot or something like that, where, okay, you only enjoy it because you're being with them, but it has nothing to do with the game. But as my kids got older, I started playing some games with them that I might not play on my own, but actually with them, it was really cool. And Car Wars, the card game, I don't remember where we picked that up. And it has nothing to do, by the way, for those of you who are in the know, with the old Car Wars auto duel stuff from, I mean, it is in that same vein, but it doesn't have nearly that complexity. It's just, you have two cars and you're playing cards from your hand to throw flamethrower shots and machine guns and launch rockets at the other guy. And if you have armor in your hand, you can block it and sometimes counter with other stuff. And so it is so luck of the draw. I mean, the mechanics are not really that interesting. The theme, though, really is. And when you're playing with a young boy who's just enamored with, you know, destroying vehicles with these cool weapons, it really makes for a fun experience. I actually still enjoy getting that out with my son every now and then. He's almost 18. What about you?
I've only got one in this category. I can only think of one. So Mealborn is kind of in a similar boat. A lot of luck of the draw. If you play with the point scoring system, it is long.
Yeah.
And my wife and I just play to 1,000 points, which means a game takes about 10 minutes. So, you know, for what it is, it's not bad. But I remember we went on a camping trip in southern Missouri, and we played this game probably 20 times. We played it on our picnic table. We played it around the campfire. We played it in the tent when it was raining. I think we even played it in the car once when we were, you know, just parked somewhere. We played it a lot. And sure, it's not a great game, but I had a lot of fun playing it with my wife. And I still have it. I would try to steer her away from it, probably, mm-hmm. if she suggested it. But I will always have the memories from that one camping trip, and they're tied to Mealborn, for better or for worse. So
Yeah, that's one I played a lot with my sister growing up, but I'm with you on the quality of the game. not terribly interesting. You know, there is another one I can think of. And actually, I don't think that you and I have ever played this game together. Bang?
I don't think we've played it together. I've played it, but I'm not with you.
Okay. So, again, this is one of those games where I had a particular group of students that I would play it with. And it's really fun because, you know, like at a student retreat or something, you bring out this big bang the bullet metal, you know, tin, and you'd open it up and everybody's gathered around going, wow. And, you know, the cards could do some really great and amazing things, you know. It has so much in it that I dislike in a game. It's a way too long for what it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
It has player elimination, which right. when combined with the length of the game can make getting eliminated just really stink.
Right.
But boy, you get the Gatling gun weapon out and you have three bang cards in your hand. Pop, pop, pop. Oh, it's just so satisfying. And, you know, figuring out who the outlaw was the renegade,
okay.
You know, was, or, you know, being the renegade and trying to fool the outlaws into thinking you're on their side and that somebody else is the renegade. We just have a lot of rich gaming experiences with that particular group. But again, it's not a game that I could really highly recommend.
We're going to have to differ on that one. I've never had a good experience playing Bang. It seems like I either am out on the first round and then I'm sitting there watching people, or I'm in the game, but it takes way too long for me.
It is. You know, as long as we're on that subject, too, there's another one that I know is very popular, and I'm sure tons of people have great experiences with, and I do, too. But I had eventually the experience versus the length of the game killed Munchkin for me.
Okay. I've never played Munchkin, so.
You've never played
Munchkin? I've dodged that bullet.
Yeah. I mean, the core idea is funny, and it has so many tongue-in-cheek characters that it just makes everybody laugh. But in the end, it just takes so long. The experience just wasn't worth the game. You know, I will say this, too. This is very much a your mileage may vary situation. And
absolutely.
I think both, you know, for our listeners, I'll say both Andrew and I really recognize that what gives your group a great experience is a very subjective thing.
Sure.
I've talked to people for whom Dead of Winter has replaced Shadows Over Camelot. I don't get it. I've played Dead of Winter twice. It doesn't do for me what Shadows does.
For me, Dead of Winter feels like a non-cooperative game. You know, you've all got those personal victory conditions, but that kind of killed the game for me. And part of it is theme, too. You know, I'm not a Zombies fan. I'd much rather be an Arthurian knight. You know, that's epic and awesome. And killing zombies has never been a theme that grabs me. But yeah, Dead of Winter, a lot of people love it. Didn't ring my bell.
And for me, like on that game, it's just in Shadows, it's a bunch of good guys trying to ferret out who that bad guy is. And it's just this big light versus dark battle. Whereas Dead of Winter sort of blurs the lines. But some people like that better. Some people like the experience of, oh, I got to finish my objective. And even though you guys weren't traitors, but you were helping along with it, you haven't met your objectives yet, but it doesn't really matter because I just won the game. Maybe that creates story for some groups,
sure.
But it's just not the kind of people that I play with typically. So, again, it's just a very subjective thing.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that's the end of our lists for today. Games that were so powerful that remember specific plays. Games where the accumulated depth of experiences made it a favorite. And games we didn't even like, but still managed to create an incredible game experience. What do we have on board for next week?
Next week, we're going to be talking about first impressions in a game. So maybe a game that you first hated, and then it's later come around to be a favorite. And for me, what I'm really excited to talk about, games where from the moment you opened the box, you knew in your heart of hearts that this was going to be a favorite. And did that first impression bear out? So that's what we'll be talking about next week. This has been Get On Board. I'm Andrew.
I'm Tim.
And you can find us on YouTube, SoundCloud, and BoardGameGeek. We'll be back next week with more great content.
Goodbye.